The Ryan Tuberty Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our best ever Wi-Fi all around your home, your world is limitless.
Last week I was talking about the Republican Party convention, and I was struck by a little moment in that convention where somebody compared the president to my beloved James Stewart, and not only that, but even more beloved character of George Bailey in my favourite film of all time, It's a Wonderful Life. And lo and behold, a couple of days later, none other than James Stewart's daughter, Kelly Stewart Harcourt, wrote a letter to the New York Times saying, please don't do that. That's not cool. My dad wouldn't approve of that at all. And I thought, I would love to talk to Kelly Stewart Harcourt. And so what a pleasure it is to say, Kelly Stewart Harcourt, good morning. Welcome to our programme.
Good morning.
It's very nice to talk to you. And I think you obviously thought last week, enough is enough. I'm taking a little ownership about this. Well, what happened when you got wind of the Republican convention and the appropriation of that wonderful character your father played in It's a Wonderful Life?
Well, I hadn't been watching the convention during Natalie Harp's speech, mm-hmm. and an old school buddy of mine sent me an email and said, can you believe this woman started a speech like this? So I watched the speech on YouTube, and I did something that I've never, you know, I don't really make public statements like that, but I just couldn't, that opening of hers, I just couldn't let that go. So I just wrote what was printed in the Times, and I just posted it on my Facebook page. And a friend of mine said, why don't you send it to the New York Times? And I have never sent a letter to the editor in my life, but I have great respect for the New York Times, and I read it every day. So I got on their website, and I went to their letter section, and I sent this to them. And they let me know the next day by email they were going to, they published it online first, and then they published it in print.
And they said, and obviously it got an enormous response, because anyone who's seen the movie and who knows anything about your dad, James Stewart, will know that George Bailey is everything that's great about not just America, but about small towns in every country, in every city around the world.
Yeah. Yeah, and it just highlights what's good about human nature.
Yeah. And can you tell... go on. You keep going there.
No, it's just sort of... It's what we like to think of ourselves as being.
Precisely.
You know, yeah.
And can you tell us a little bit about growing up in the Stewart household? It must have been very peculiar, given that your dad was one of the most famous people in the world, essentially.
Well, you know, Dad never brought his work to the house. You know, he walked through the front door and his work stayed outside. So, you know, I wasn't aware that my father was famous until I was about seven. And we weren't affected by it at all. Dad really wasn't, you know, he and Mom didn't court the limelight. And in those days, the press was more discreet and everything wasn't about exposing your life to the public. So, you know, I thought we grew up fairly normally in terms of, you know, how families are together in the house. I mean, we were privileged and we were very comfortable, but I wouldn't say that we had a Hollywood upbringing by any means.
And when you think about the back catalogue, let's talk about It's a Wonderful Life for a moment, because it's a film that didn't do great business at the box office initially, but has become this staple of kindness and warmth and decency every Christmas all around the world. Because, you know, it is amazing. And Kelly, like your dad in that film, the bouncy bonhomie of somebody with the world at his feet descends into the banality of reality and normality, and then bounces back when he realizes actually that mundane is beautiful too, and isn't mundane at all. It's just a story for our time.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's, you know, it's somebody who gave up their dreams to help someone else. You know, they really put other people's lives before them, and at the end they were rewarded.
And did you ever watch that film with your dad?
Oh, every Christmas.
What?
You know, because they played it every Christmas. Yeah. And so it's sort of been part of my growing up is watching It's a Wonderful Life. You know, we'd all gather around in the library and turn the TV on, and, you know, it was just part of Christmas.
And was he and were you as moved as people like me, generation later, and so many people listening to the program going, every time I've watched that movie every single year, and you get moved to tears? Or do you just get past that?
No. Are you kidding? I cry every time I see it. In fact, I get irritated. You know, I start watching that film, I say, okay, I am not going to cry when they sing Old Lang Syne. I refuse to cry. But it happens every time.
Why fight it, eh? Why fight it, Kelly? It's just, it's there. It's beautiful.
I know.
And actually that scene, well, I just think it's so brave, that scene where he goes into the bar and he's had enough.
Oh, it's one of the all-time great scenes in the movies, I think.
I agree with you. And he puts his knuckles in his mouth and the tears in his eyes. What man or woman hasn't been there where you're just going, I don't know how much more of this I can take.
But that desperation.
Isn't it?
And the hopelessness. I mean, that's some of Dad's finest acting.
Oh, I agree.
That scene.
And I suppose it was, in some ways it was so unexpected because he was so jolly for all of this film. And in fact, so much of his early films, that sort of sense of decency and hope. And this kind of darkness that he portrayed. I think there was only, was it just one take? He couldn't do it again. It was just too much.
Yeah. But, you know, it's very interesting. I think it's the first film that he did where those kind of emotions came out, and it's interesting that it was his first film after the war.
Yeah.
You know, so his films after the war, I mean, maybe it's because they weren't making madcap comedies anymore. I'm sure that was part of it. But, you know, he changed, in the kind of characters that he portrayed changed. There was much more conflict in the characters that he played when he came back.
He was in the Army Air Corps, Brigadier General, actually, in the Army Air Corps, and fully decorated for, what, about 20 combat missions, flew over Germany as leader of a squadron of B-24s. I mean, I was talking to a guy called Michael Parkinson, a famous interviewer I'm sure you've heard of over in the UK. He always uses your father as an example of actors at a time when they had something to say. In other words, they had a life fully lived. Whereas now, they just, I just moved into a new crib. You go, oh, that's great. Whereas your father was able to say, well, in a very humble way, I did this, that. I mean, this was not just a one-trick pony, your dad.
No. No, and, you know, he never wanted to glorify war. It really affected him. He told me once it was the most, you know, the proudest thing that he's done in his life for him was his service, his military service. But he never made a war film. You know, he didn't want to glorify it at all. He didn't want to focus the attention on him as opposed to the men that he flew with and some who died. You know, it was just a really important part of him.
And when you talk about how things changed after the war and his roles got, he changed as an actor in some ways. His collaboration with Alfred Hitchcock was extraordinary again, because suddenly you saw this tormented soul in the likes of Vertigo, Rear Window, one of my favourite films.
I know. That's definitely my favourite Hitchcock film, Rear Window.
Is it really? Why?
Oh, I just think everything about it is so brilliant, and it's creepy, but Dad isn't creepy, and Grace Kelly is so fabulous in it. You know, it's just everything about that film.
And you're
kind of a peeping Tom with him. Well, Hitchcock.
Yeah.
Nobody made him like Hitchcock did.
I don't mean any disrespect to your mother, but that Grace Kelly kissing your father, James Stewart, in that film Rear Window is my favorite screen kiss of all time. Is that appropriate to say?
I know. No, she was. That was quite a film. Grace Kelly was leaning over Dad's shoulder when he was in the wheelchair and just so close to his face.
and I think Hitchcock knew what he was doing there as well. It was masterful in many regards.
Oh yeah, yeah.
This may sound like a strange thing to say, but I'm going to admit it anyway. As a big fan, when your mother died, Gloria, there was this very small piece in the paper here in Ireland saying that your father was pining for her, that he missed her so much. I thought it was so utterly romantic. I cut it out. And it was 1996. I know this because I sellotaped it to a piece of cardboard and kept it in my wallet as one of the most romantic things I've ever read. And something to aspire to. Romance and dignity and all the good things that somebody would want in their lives. Was your dad for real?
Yeah. Yeah, he was. You know, and I think that's why he's so enduring with the public, is because he never let them down. He was always what they thought he was. He never strayed from that. And he, you know, he really was like the characters he played. I mean, he really was a lot like George Bailey.
It's very...
He was for real.
It is very beautiful to hear that. There's a quote from your mother from the Washington Post in the 90s where she said about your father, "The more beautiful and glamorous his leading lady was, the more attention he paid to me."
That's so perfect. It's also so mom.
Is that right?
Yeah. You know, and they had such respect for each other, and they shared this wonderful humor. And that was a big part of their love, was respect and humor.
Your dad, as you well know, and I'm going to play it, the poem he read for the dog, A Dog Named Bo.
Oh, yeah.
What? Tell me about Bo, and why did that resonate with people, and still does?
Well, Dad had a, you know, we all loved Bo. Bo was his golden retriever, and he sometimes bit people. He could kind of fly off the handle sometimes. You had to be a little careful with him. Mm-hmm. And we had many funny experiences with Bo, and it was a real loss when he died. But I'll never forget, I was working in Africa, and I met my parents in Nairobi because they were there on a trip. And I was in Rwanda. I met them in Nairobi, and Dad had written this poem. And my mother and sister, Judy, were there. And I'll never forget, we were in the hotel room in Nairobi, and Dad read us that poem. We hadn't heard it. And, you know, the way he reads it is very moving.
Mm-hmm.
And we were, of course, in tears. And I got infuriated that he would do this to us. And I stood up and I said, "Thanks a lot, Dad. Why don't I jump out the window and kill myself, and then you can write a poem about that?" And I went storming out of the room.
What a reaction. Well, it must have been a very moving experience for you. I mean, the poem is so beautiful, but you were obviously very close.
Oh, yeah, and I tell you, that's another one. I can't hear him read that poem without crying. And in that in the Johnny Carson show where he reads it, Johnny Carson is crying.
Well, we should have a little listen to it because it's something I've played before, but I want to play it again, seeing as you're here with me.
Let me get some Kleenex.
Get the tissues out. Here it is. This is your father on the Johnny Carson show, the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, reading a poem about that beloved dog. And I think anyone who's ever had a family pet that is so beloved will understand where James Stewart is coming from here.
"He never came to me when I would call unless I had a tennis ball or he felt like it. But mostly he didn't come at all. When he was young, he never learned to heel or sit or stay. He did things his way. Discipline was not his bag, but when you're with him, things sure didn't drag. He'd dig up a rose bush just to spite me, and when I'd grab him, he'd turn and bite me. He bit lots of folks from day to day. The delivery boy was his favorite prey. And there were nights when I'd feel him climb upon our bed and lie between us, and I'd pat his head. And there were nights when I'd feel this stare, and I'd wake up, and he'd be sitting there, and I'd reach out my hand to stroke his hair, and sometimes I'd feel him sigh, and I think I know the reason why. he'd wake up at night and he would have this fear of the dark, of life, of lots of things. And he'd be glad to have me near. And now he's dead. And there are nights when I think I feel him climb up upon our bed and lie between us. And I pat his head. And there are nights when I think I feel that stare. And I reach out my hand to stroke his hair, but he's not there. Oh, how I wish that wasn't so. I'll always love a dog named Bo.
It's such a beautiful thing. And how is it to hear your father like that, Kelly, on a given day?
Oh, it just makes me miss him, because that's how he talked.
Yeah. He had such a distinctive voice. And the Jimmy Stewart Museum in Indiana is now on my, probably the top of my list. As soon as this pandemic calms down, I'm going to come over and see. What can I expect to see there?
Oh, the Jimmy Stewart Museum is a wonderful place. You know, and it's been going since, I think, the year after Dad died, 1998. And it's what I call an impeccable museum, a small museum dedicated to a subject, but they have done so much over the years. They've educate the public. It doesn't just showcase Dad's legacy and his life. They teach people about the times and the movie business and Dad's military career, and they do outreach with schools, and they've kept it very unpretentious and simple, just the way Dad would have liked it. You know, they didn't get all fancy, and yet they introduced latest technology and things. I mean, I can't say enough good things about the Jimmy Stewart Museum. It's a wonderful little place to go to.
It's a wonderful museum, an appropriate
like
description.
It.
Yeah.
Like it.
Oh, I'm there. I'm in the front of the queue as soon as we're flying again. And you have an Irish connection, of course, because your parents' housekeeper was from this part of the world.
Oh yes, Anne Coyle for years and years. Well, Anne was. Really became part of the family, and she was there until the end, and then she took the dogs. She took we had two other golden retrievers, and you know, my sister and brother and I were not living there anymore, and so Anne stayed around for a while and looked after the dogs, and then she moved back to Ireland.
And you came to visit her?
Been to visit her. She moved to Enniscorthy.
Okay, good. So there was a nice a little green connection between the Stewarts and ourselves here in Ireland, which is lovely.
Oh, yeah. And I've been to Ireland. I love Ireland. I'd love to go back.
Oh, you've got to come and see us when you come over next.
Oh, yeah.
We'd love that. When you got that email, just to finish our conversation the way we started it, you got an email to say, have you seen what happened at the Republican convention? It wasn't just any old pal who sent you that, was it? There was a little Hollywood connection, Kelly.
It was Trina Mitchum, Robert Mitchum's daughter, who I went to school with. She was a friend. And she said, sent me this. She said, Kelly, you've got to do something.
we're facing into a presidential election. The whole world watches with bated breath in November. And the feeling among some pundits is that Donald Trump is possibly edging towards four more years. What do you think James Stewart would make of the Republican Party in 2020?
Oh, you know, I miss Mom and Dad terribly, but I'm glad they don't have to see what's happened to their Republican Party. It's not their Republican Party at all. I think they would be pretty appalled. I think they'd be pretty appalled.
Okay, yeah, it's a tough time for Republicans of a certain hue. No question about that. Kelly, it's been absolutely lovely to talk to you. We kept you up way too late, and for that we apologise. But it's so lovely to talk to the daughter of the man I've admired for so many years, and to realise that the gene has travelled beautifully. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much. It's been very enjoyable. Thanks a lot.
We'll see you soon, I hope. Take care.
Yeah, bye.
Thank you so much. That's Kelly Stewart, Harcourt, whose dad, James Stewart, I've been harping on about now since I was probably about 16 years old when I saw It's a Wonderful Life for the first time by accident on television on a wet Sunday afternoon. And I was mesmerised and have been ever since by that man and his acting abilities and storytelling chops. But what a lovely lady she is too. That's Kelly Stewart Harcourt joining us on the phone this morning. The text number is 51551.
We're going back to school. We all have a part to play in keeping our school community safe.
The government has provided a range of supports and funding to enable schools to fully and safely reopen in line with public health advice. Most students will be happy and relieved to get back to school. Some might be nervous, but that's normal. New routines and supports will be in place to keep everyone safe, and schools will tell parents and students about these. All students need to know that it is important to wash your hands regularly and to cover any coughs or sneezes. Anyone with COVID-19 symptoms should not attend school.
For more, see gov.ie/backtoschool. We're in this together.
Supported by the Government of Ireland.
At Centra, we have everything you need for back to school. Like Centra Family Meals 1.1 to 1.2 kilo, only €5 each. And in our better than half price sale, Bird's Eye Chicken Dippers 403 gram, now €3.18. And Innocent Smoothies for Kids 4-pack, now €1.85 each. Centra, live every day.
The Ryan Tuberty Show on RTE Radio 1.
Kind of want to go home now and watch It's a Wonderful Life, but I only allow myself to watch it in December because it's only right. Would you please give a big thanks to the staff, says the text, at Trump's International Doombag Hotel for all the top class and care, making us feel very safe. I'm a lady of a high risk and had my first break there with my two daughters and my sister, and I felt very safe. Well done to all working there. Thank you. Yeah, happy to do that, of course. And also, text says, my mum and dad went to see It's a Wonderful Life at the Pavilion last Christmas. My mum said it was the first time she witnessed a standing ovation at the end of a movie. There's so much love for James Stewart in the text. Honest to goodness. Marion Ballincollig says that James Stewart said something happened to him in It's a Wonderful Life when he said the lines, "God, show me the way, will you?" And in that scene where he's crying in the bar, that's the bit. I'm gone, lads. He said he felt the lines so deeply, and even as he was telling this in an interview, he got emotional again. It happened every time he spoke about that part of the movie. I love every movie he's starred in, says Mary.